And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is what?
It's January.
I almost said January. November 27th, 2016, program 135 in the series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. Glad to be here.
We have Mike Costella here as well. What's up, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're all right. And Elif Garris, our producer, she's from Turkey, but she's no turkey when it comes to producing this show.
That's a really good one. That is rich.
Well, it is Turkey. You know, we're the week after Turkey Day here.
Yeah.
So we have to bring that up. And in just a moment, we're going to bring Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry Parent Company, to Cat's Pride in here to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. And we have three classic radio shows from now through 2 o'clock in the morning. Bing Crosby with the Philco Radio Time, The Adventures of Ellery Queen, and The Whistler. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as General Dan McMahon in the upcoming war film War Machine, based on the nonfiction book The Operators.
What do they win?
Ooh, this is a great prize. It's a Christmas package. Includes a Lightkeeper Pro and a Scentkeeper.
Yeah, I saw TV commercials for the Lightkeeper
Pro. Did you?
Pro.
Yeah, did you buy one?
No.
Oh, well,
I'm hoping to
call
win
in
one. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of Inglourious Basterds.
I'm putting together a special team. We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis.
312-981-7200. Who is that actor? We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. This is show 135. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I'm putting together a special team. We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis.
And we're going to talk to Susan from Chicago. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great.
Great, great. Who is that actor?
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt is absolutely right. We are so thrilled, Susan, to give you a Christmas package. It includes a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets, and a scent keeper for real Christmas tree scent, or Carl likes to use it for deodorant. Same thing.
Yeah.
Check it out at lightkeeperpro.com. Thanks so much for calling
in.
We hope
you know
to
who
stay
else
with us
uses
here.
Uses it as deodorant? Brad Pitt's brother, Armpit.
Armpit. Hey, it's better than nothing, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Good one, Carl.
All right, Susan. Thank you very much.
You just cut her off.
I didn't cut her off.
Oh, well.
All right, so Susan's a winner. All right, so is that it? Can we bring Dan Jaffe on?
All right, I'll go get him. He's out in the
All
West
right,
Wing
let's
over
bring
here.
Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, parent company of Cat's Pride, Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Carl, thanks for having me.
Hi,
it's
Dan.
Good to see you, Dan.
Hi, Lisa.
Thank you for being our sponsor. We love you, and we love Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. Tell us, you have a really great campaign going right now with Katherine Heigl. People have seen the commercials on television, and also you're doing something with Kelly, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so we're very excited about the partnership with the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which is Katherine's deceased brother. He passed away in a tragic accident when he was 15, and when she got to be rich and famous, she wanted to do something in his honor. He loved companion animals, so she started a foundation dedicated to ending the needless suffering of companion animals, and we were happy to partner with them. So every time someone buys a jug, a green jug of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, we make a donation to the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation. And we've been advertising Catherine Starrs in our TV spot. She plays a pet therapist, and they're humorous and very informative. And so we've been running a lot of TV advertising, and ABC was appreciative of all the advertising we had done. So they gave us what's known as an integration, where we actually were the sponsor on Live with Kelly. And it went so well. They had, I think, 40 or 50,000 entrants into this Catch the Cat thing, and they usually don't get a third of that.
Wow.
So now they're going to come back, and we're going to do an integration in the spring with the 3 weeks leading up to the Oscars. We will be sponsoring Live with Kelly. So
yeah.
It's very exciting.
And I watch it. And so this little animated kitty cat pops up during the Kelly show. And it has a secret word on there, something like that, right? And then they just go to a website and put in the secret word, and then they're entered. And they can win $10,000.
Right. Now, that contest is over, so
okay.
Someone already won the $10,000.
All right, so somebody won. But you're going to do something leading up to the Oscars, though, something different?
They're going to have an Oscar package where they're actually going to send some winners out to Los Angeles.
Ah.
They're going to get to go to the red carpet and see
nice.
All the stars come in. They're going to get to go to a post-Oscar party. And I think they'll even get tickets for the Live with Kelly show, which is the day after the Oscars, filmed in L.A. She usually films in New York, but she'll be out in L.A. for that.
So as important as it is to be donating money to this wonderful charity, people, when you can switch over to, if you're using a different brand, you should be switching over to Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, because one, a donation, a portion of the proceeds goes to this wonderful charity. But the other reason is because it's a much better product, and Dan will tell you why.
Yeah, well, the most important attributes of cat litter are always odor control, clump strength, low dust, low tracking, high absorbency, and ours absolutely maxes out in all of those categories. But the one added benefit then is it is 50% lighter. So you get the same fills, same usages, same volume, but it weighs half as much. We use a lighter density mineral, so it actually cuts the carbon footprint in half, which is why we put it in the green jug. So you're not only doing something good for your own cat, you're doing something good for all cats with the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, and you're doing something good for the environment by cutting the carbon footprint in half. And for us, using is believing, so that's why we're here, and to give away a year's supply of cat litter, because we know if once a consumer tries it, our repeat is fantastic. It's just we need to break through the clutter in the shelves and get people to try our product, which is why we always say look for the green jug.
Yes, look for the green jug.
And just to add to that, Dan, quick story. My I don't have a cat. I have a dog, but my daughter has a cat. She was home for an entire week, a little bit more than a week for Thanksgiving. So, of course, I bought Cat's Pride, Fresh and Light, Ultimate Care. I've used it before, but, you know, just for a day here and there, and it's very difficult to tell the difference for a day. But when we had it in the litter for an entire week, I absolutely did notice a difference. And my big area is odor control. I just don't want the room to stink. You know, I don't know. What can I say? It's crazy. I don't want a stinky room. It absolutely was the cleanest, freshest room it has ever been with Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. And that's a true story. Literally, the cat left today. So if I had a cat, I would absolutely use that product. And every time she comes in now, I've got the green
jug. That's a nice endorsement right there from Lisa Wolf.
Yep.
No, it's a great endorsement.
But it's absolutely true.
And we actually guarantee 10-day odor control. It could obviously go longer, but everyone.
About that.
Yeah,
it was right
but
about
most
that.
People, yeah, scoop and clean more frequently. So,
yes.
Yeah, we guarantee it.
All right, so Dan is here to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. And so could we have a drum roll, please?
Okay, let's see what we came up with here. Tegan, mom, and her cat Nikita from Grays Lake, Illinois, they were featured in the picture, and then it was sent in by Deborah, mom. So the moms have won.
Very, very nice. All right, now here's how you can win possibly next month, folks. Every month, Dan Jaffe comes in here, gives away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. All you have to do is take a picture of your kitty cat. You could be in the picture, too. It'd be fine. Just email it to us here at
catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure to put your name, your cat's name, your city and state. Enter every single month. Every single month at the end of the month, we'll come back and do this over again. So get your entries in now. End of December, we'll do it all over again.
Yes, sir.
And I promised Dave Weiske, who is our vice president of customer satisfaction, that we would mention that tomorrow on Amazon, Amazon.com, it's Cyber Monday. And if you buy Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care in either the two or the three packs, you will save 15%. So
Very good. Cyber Monday. All right, so make sure you do that tomorrow on Cyber Monday. And Dan Jaffe, thank you for coming in. Thank you for being a sponsor. And I'm sure the mums are very happy right now.
Mums the word.
Exactly. All right, it's time for the Philco Radio Time Bing Crosby special guest, Abe Burrows. Let's go back to February 23rd, 1949. Part one now of the Philco Radio Time.
Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day.
With John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Judd Collins for the Mayors, and Bing's guests. Peggy Lee, a pretty girl.
True.
And Abe Burrows, a funny man.
True.
And now here's Bing Crosby, a carefree boy.
False. Next contestant, please.
Oh, Bing, you know that at heart you're really just a carefree boy.
At heart, yes, but the rest of me won't cooperate.
Think of all the men I know. You're one of the most active. You ride, you swim, you hunt, fish, golf.
That's me, Jack Armstrong, All-American Charlie Horse.
To sing.
I always manage to do that somehow. Besides, I have a very charming accomplice this evening.
Oh, you mean, of course, Peggy Lee?
The Chesterfield girl herself. Take a bow, Peggy.
Hi, fella.
Oh, thank you. Peggy, how about it? You ready?
I'm all set, Bing.
The Rhythmaires are gliding alongside in their canoe, bringing along beads, carved coconuts, bits of coral, and a very stylish arrangement if I want to go. Where you go.
Oh, the natives are so charming in this quaint little isle of Philco.
Yes, let's go, shall we? Huh? If we get mixed up, we'll segue right into Aloha on the steel guitar. John, let's do it.
I want to go where you go, do what you do, love when you love, then I'll be happy.
Well, it should have been adequate, Ken. There were seven of us in there punching on that thing.
Well, that reminds me of a wonderful place for you to go. A place where you'll be very happy.
I know, Mr. Paley.
No.
I mean, where's that, Ken? Where's a good place to go, and what makes you so happy there?
Why, Bing, go to your Philco dealer. That's where.
Well, you're right, Ken. It'll sure make the Philco dealers happy,
too. It'll make you happy, too.
Well, it should. They've got very happy stuff there.
Those happy dealers have some very happy bargains, too.
If Happy Chandler's listening, hi. That also goes for Happy Felton, Happy Hooligan, and the Happiness Boy. Miss Lee, would you join me in presenting for the first time on this radio program a song entitled So in Love?
Oh, I'd love to.
You got yourself a boy, Peg.
And you got yourself a girl.
At last.
Strange, dear, but true, dear, when I'm close to you, dear, the stars fill the sky, so in love with you.
Without you, my arms fold about you. You know, darling, why? So in love with you am I.
A radio time pushed a piano to the middle of the music room and beckoned a lad named Burroughs to park his portly presence on the bench. The smiling young satirist was such a smash that we felt impelled to ask him back again. Thus, friends, here is radio's velvet foghorn, Abe Burroughs.
Hello, I'm Burroughs, like he said.
Abe, I see where right now you're appearing at the Radisson Hotel in Minneapolis. Then on Friday, you're opening at the Park Plaza in St. Louis. And at the same time, you're broadcasting here with me in Hollywood. What's the idea of all this scurrying about?
Well, Bing, I have found that when you sing like I do, you gotta be a moving target.
I keep fairly mobile myself. Yeah.
That's the first portion of the Philco Radio Time. Bing Crosby as star, along with special guest Abe Burroughs. We'll get back to that in a few moments. Folks, I've set up a website. I think you're going to love it. It's freeradioclassics.com. How would you like 52 classic radio shows absolutely free every single year? And I'm not talking about just for 1 year. You can have 52 classic radio shows for me, all digitally remastered, brilliant sound, every single year. Just go to freeradioclassics.com, just like Roger Badish did. He signed up, and yep, he's going to get 52 classic radio shows from me. Every Monday, Roger, you're going to get a different classic radio show from me.
I can't wait. I've got 24 minutes left before the next one. Well, it doesn't happen right at midnight.
but
Monday comes in 24 minutes, so
yeah,
the new one's going to be there when I wake up in the morning.
And that's right.
It's a countdown.
Yep. Every single week you get a different classic radio show, but you get more. There's more than just a classic
radio
show.
There's more?
There's more.
What else do they get, Lisa?
Let me tell you, Roger, what else there is. There are pictures of the stars that are in the radio show. There's a synopsis of the show, gives you a little bit of background. There are some of the original commercials that were in these radio shows originally, and I know sometimes we don't have the time to play them, but they're fantastic. What else?
Yeah, these are
in
uncut.
There?
These shows come to you uncut or as originally broadcast with the original commercials.
It just gives you a lot more background into the show.
There's the cast listing.
Right.
There's the pictures, as you said.
All the dates are there.
This newsletter, you know, with the link, comes every Monday to you. 52 of them a year. And there's no cost. It's absolutely free. It's because you're a listener to this show. It's our way of thanking you for being a listener to this show. Tell all your friends. Just go to freeradioclassics.com. There is an S at the end of classics, freeradioclassics.com. Just put your first and last name and your email address, and that's all you have to do. You will get like an email that you have to then click, and then you're subscribed.
Link.
Yeah. That's how it works. It's a confirmation link. All right, so do that. You can do it tonight, and then you'll get, if you do it tonight, you'll get your first email tomorrow. Well,
in like 22 minutes,
well,
right, Roger?
No, you get it around, it's like, I think we mail it around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that.
Keep but I, waiting, Roger.
All right. You know what? The phone goes buzz, buzz, buzz. I look over.
And it's Carl.
There's Carl. I'm going, hope. Oh, I'm a happy little camper.
There's that pain in the neck, Carl Amari. Again.
Well, there's no pictures of Carl, just pictures of the radio star, so it's okay.
Right,
even though I'm a little weird, and I do have a little picture of Carl that pops up when I see his email, but that's just me.
and the other thing is, if you don't want to get these, you can unsubscribe at any time.
But I don't think you'll want to, but I
just want to let people know that they're not locked into it if they don't want to get it anymore. But go to freeradioclassics.com. All right, let's tune in to the conclusion now of the Philco Radio Time, and his special guest is Abe Burrows. You know who Abe Burrows' son is? Roger, do you know?
He has produced a whole bunch of TV shows.
You're very right. That's James right. Burrows. Mm-hmm. He was the creator of Cheers, co-creator of Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
So you will hear this episode now, the conclusion from February 23rd, 1949, the Philco Radio Time with Bing Crosby.
Hey, while we're on the subject, how about singing one of your typical type songs right now?
Well, Bing, here's a type song. It's kind of cute. It's a very common type song. One of those ballads where a guy is itemizing all the sentimental little things that went to make up his love for her.
Oh.
It's what you'd call a laundry list type song. Very sophisticated. Should be wearing sequins. Like this, I'll show you.
This man divulges his sources, don't
you? You are gone and I am here. I am here and you are gone. Gone are you and here am I. Little things around the place I find that of you do me remind. The pile of dirty dishes and the garbage in the sink. The spot upon the carpet where your mother spilt her drink. The picture of your father that was taken in the clink. Tender little foolish memories. Here's a marriage license that I thought would start a gay adventure. A baseball bat you used the time you thought I needed censure. The little satin jewel box where you kept your plastic denture. Tender little foolish memories. Oh, we could have been such a happy pair, but something must have gone wrong. It started with the honeymoon trip. I still think I should have gone along. There's a pair of stockings drying on a shower curtain rack. A lovely negligee. You wore it like a potato sack. And the double lock I put on the door so that you can't get back. And a little foolish memories.
Well, that's very sentimental, Abe. I'm sure you must have written that after a frightfully human experience.
Yeah, it was pretty frightful, all right.
Abe, for years you were a radio writer. When did you first realize you could sing?
It was about 8 years ago, Bing. I was taking a bath and suddenly I started to sing.
Was that the first time?
No, I've been taking baths for years.
I'll say one thing about your singing, Abe. You've got a powerful voice.
Say thanks. It's really nothing that years of training couldn't do for you.
Really?
You see, Bing, you got to be able to use your diaphragm and lungs. You must inhale enough air to force the notes out with power and authority. Mm-hmm. Inhaling air, that's the important thing. It's the same principle that's used by John Charles Thomas, Lawrence Melchior, and Hoover Vacuum Cleaner.
Next time I put on my blue serge suit, I want you to come over and sing the lint off it, will you?
I also do pressing, which we're doing right now.
Yes, we... Agreed.
Well, as long as singing is our bent, we're pressing.
Pressing again.
Why don't we do an operetta?
You got one on you?
Certainly. I got a very romantic type operetta here, but I'll need you and Peggy Lee to help me.
Oh, you don't need us, Abe.
Peggy, where'd you come from?
We flew her in just for that one line.
What a program. They spare no expense.
Until we pay you.
Well, anyway, I need you and Peg to help me with this operetta, Bing. If I sing it alone, I may lose face.
I wouldn't let an opportunity like that get by.
I was pressing my face. You'll really love this, Bing. It's my masterwork. It's a romantic, mythical kingdom-type operetta.
Oh, yeah.
You know the kind.
Oh, yeah, like the Prince of Pilsen or the Student Prince.
The Count of Luxembourg, the Queen of Hearts.
Jack of Diamonds.
Six of Clubs.
Jen.
Yeah. No, I'm serious about this, Bing. This is a very beautiful, mythical kingdom-type operetta. You know these things. They're almost always about love among the nobility.
Oh, yes, I know him well. The handsome young prince who becomes enamored of the poor but well-built goose girl.
Precisely. But you see, it's one of those things, you know, where he can't marry her because he has inherited the rare ailment that runs in his royal family.
What's the ailment?
Holes in the head. Anyway, this operetta of mine is called The Duke of Wittendorten. Dilly Dilly. Now, The Duke of Wittendorten is the story of Rudolf von und zu Mittelchuck, fourth Duke of Wittendorten.
Duke of Wittendorten. Who plays the role of the Duke, Dilly Dilly?
You. I will play the part of your old counselor, Heinrich Heffelflugel, who is affectionately known as Schmozy. Anyway, as the curtain goes up, we find you, the Duke of Wittendorten, sitting in your palace, munching on a piece of pumpernickel. That's the national bread of Wittendorten. And your old counselor, that's me, comes in.
What do you say?
I have come to see you, your serene supreme highness.
What about Schmozy, my faithful old counselor, grown bald in my service?
Well, I'll tell you your SSH. It's about the people. They are clamoring for bread.
Bread, eh? I have it. Let them eat cake.
Listen, you say let them eat cake. Don't you understand? The people are sick of cake. Here in Wittendorten, they love pumpernickel.
Yes, Wittendortenites love pumpernickel.
True, true. Wittendortenites love their pumpernickel.
Dream days and nights of pumpernickel.
When they eat cake, they don't feel fed.
Don't want whole wheat or shortening bread.
Rolls they berate.
Bagels they hate. In Wittendorten they love. Love their pumpernickel. Ah, Schmozy, it's strange. Yet I am the Duke of Wittendorten. I have power, wealth, my people are starving, and yet I feel dissatisfied.
Maybe it is a wife, perhaps you should have.
A wife?
Yes, you know, one of those round, soft things.
This is better than pumpernickel.
Now, what do you say about plighting your troth to our neighbor, the Duchess of Dorton-Ditten?
What? You expect me, Rudolph, Duke of Wittendorten, to marry the Duchess of Dorton-Ditten down there?
But, Your Highness, it's a rich country there. They have the world's largest dooze mine.
Dooze?
Dooze. D-O-O-Z, dooze.
What's dooze?
It's very valuable. What does doesn't do, does does. You're not listening.
I am, Bill.
You are gazing out of yonder palace window with a faraway look in your pumpernickel.
It's no use, Mosey. My heart still belongs to someone else.
You mean you are still yearning for the girl you loved in your student days, but who you could never marry because she was a commoner?
Yes, I still love little Schnapsy. She was so schnappy.
We nobility cannot marry peasants.
Why not?
It'd kill the racket.
But I love little Schnapsy. May not a duke love? True, I'm a duke, but don't forget, I am also a man.
Ridiculous. Well, sir, now the stage darkens and we do a flash type back scene, you see. We flash back to the duke's student days. We flash back to the Duke student days at the University of Humperdinck.
Oh, good old UH. Pronounced,
The young Duke and his friend Schmozy are talking in a tavern when a lovely barmaid approaches them. She is dressed in a lamé gown with a plunging neckline, a sequin-covered apron with a plunging hem, and carrying a gold plunger. This is the traditional uniform of the humble peasants. She speaks to the Duke.
Good afternoon, sir. May I help you?
Yes, Inals, dear. Good afternoon. You're beautiful. You're lovely. What's your name?
I'm Schnapsy. What's your name?
I'm not permitted to say. I am incognito. Just call me Rudolph, Duke of Dittendorf. You know something? I feel so strange. I've never felt this way before.
Maybe it's the lousy beer we have here.
Well, sir, they stand there gazing into each other's eyes, you see. Now we dim the stage again and come back to the present. We hurry for a finish now for the pace of the show and the safety of the actors, you see. Now, we find that a new situation has developed. The Duke of Dittendorf has decided to forget about poor little Schnapsy, and he has consented to finally meet the Duchess of Dorton-Ditton. Schmozy is about to bring her in, and he walks up and says to the Duke, Your Serene Supreme Highness, may I present Her Highness the Duchess of Dorton-Ditton.
Your grace.
But that voice, it can't be. This is my surprise, Rudolph. I brought back your Schnapsy. She is now a duchess. You see, several years ago, Schnapsy went to America. Mm-hmm. She went on a program called Truth or Consequences. And one of the prizes was the kingdom of Dorton-Ditton.
How wonderful. Schnapsy, we're together again, my beautiful. My sweet, we've found each other.
Now we can combine our two countries. We'll unite Dittendorton and Dorton-Ditton into one country.
What do we call it?
Sherman Oaks.
Well, gang, that sure was something.
It was something, but what was it? Title tune from the Disney picture, written by Ticker Freeman, Dinah Shore's vocal coach, arranger, and social advisor.
So dear to my heart, that September-y day, with the leaves turning brown and gold, when you were the dream I would hold, so dear to my heart. To my heart, that December-y day, when we stroll down a snow-white lane, the kiss that we shared will remain so dear to my heart. And when it's springtime, with flowers, you're the sweetest flower in you. Oh, how I treasure
and the dream that I shared with you, they bloom in my heart in a corner apart. Every sweet, tender memory, as long as I live, they will be so dear to my in my heart, in a corner apart, while I tenderly hold the key. As long as I live, they will be so dear to my heart.
As the melody and the merriment subside, at least on this little musical pyramid club, it's time to thank Peggy Lee, Abe Burrows, and Milton DeLug, the concertmeister of the Dittendorten Brass Band, for being with us here.
Well, thanks for inviting us, Bing.
Who's going to be with you next week?
Oh, next week, a smashing show with an all-star cast.
An all-star cast? What does that mean?
That means we ain't got anybody booked yet.
Well, nobody told me. I figured that. Well, if you ain't got nobody, what about me?
Well, you'll be back soon, Abe, but we'll have to give the microphone a chance to recover a little, don't you?
Well, Bing, I guess we'll just have to listen and see who's with you.
I might have to do the same thing. Good night, Peggy.
Good night, Bing.
Au revoir, Bing.
Au revoir. Abe, au revoir. Good night, folks, and thank you.
Tune in to Philco Radio Time next week and hear Bing Crosby, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Judd Collins with the Mayors, and Bing's guests, whoever they may be. Don't miss them. And remember, keep your eye on your Philco dealer now for the greatest values in radio phonographs from Philco, the leader.
That's the Philco Radio Time from February 23rd, 1949. Bing Crosby is guest, Abe Burrows, along with Peggy Lee there. You know, he was one of the best-selling recording artists of all time, Lisa. Over a half a billion records in circulation with Bing Crosby. 100 million copies of White Christmas alone. This guy was an amazing, amazing talent. A recording artist, a movie star, a radio star, television star. He was he just could do it all, and he owned racetracks and baseball teams and Bing Crosby. That's what I want to own.
I want to own
a baseball team someday.
Yeah
and then I would play all nine positions.
But you get a little old to play. You can own the team.
That's right. That's what I'm going to do. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is about 9 minutes after midnight. Happy Monday. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, you saw, A Christmas Carol?
I did. I saw right before this show. This is at Goodman Theater.
You went today?
Just now. Right before I came here. This is in its 39th year. Can you believe that?
Well, Jack Benny's 39.
See? It's always 39. So Christmas...
Rochester.
Really?
Larry Yondo is Scrooge again for the 9th time,
right.
And he is so unbelievable. A lot of the cast came back from last year. This is my favorite Christmas show, and this is the show that I go to every single year at Christmas time. I took my daughter Zoe this time, and it is a wonderful, wonderful show. I don't know how they can reimagine it every year to make it new and exciting and different, but it was spectacular, and I mean that.
Yeah, I've seen it at the Goodman, and it's just amazing.
There is no Christmas show that's better than the one at Goodman Theater right now. So, guys, check it out. Go to goodmantheater.org. Get tickets. Go see.
It's a tradition.
It's a tradition. There's a lot of Christmas shows out there, but there's nothing like this show, A Christmas Carol at Goodman Theater.
All righty. In this hour, it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen with the World Series Crime. And then in our next hour, The Whistler with the Beloved Fraud, starring Bea Benaderet, who played... she was not Wilma. She was Betty.
Betty Rubble.
Yeah, we have that for you coming up. All brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as John McKay in the upcoming sci-fi thriller Life, about an international space crew who discovers life on Mars.
All right, what do they win?
They will win a Christmas package with a Lightkeeper Pro and a Scentkeeper.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the number, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of a very creepy movie called Nightcrawler.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No.
It's one of the best actors, I think, performing today, this guy. All right, 312-981-7200. Who is that actor? Win a Lightkeeper Pro and a Scentkeeper Pro. Right?
It's close.
Something like that.
Something
like
that.
All right, we'll find our winner after this break.
We're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're all dancing here, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No.
He says no. That's a great clip. We've got Matt left from LaGrange Park. Hey, Matt.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going okay.
Are you in your car?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
All right, be careful out there. It's raining.
It's Bluetooth.
Okay. Matt, who is that actor?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal is right. Matt, even in the car phone, you're a winner. You've won the Christmas package. It includes a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets, and a Scentkeeper for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. Check it out at lightkeeperpro.com. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Take care. Drive safely.
Matt. All right. Will Thanks, do. Matt. Appreciate you. And congratulations. Matt's a winner. And he's in his car listening to the WGN Radio Theater.
I can't think of anything better to listen to.
You know,
I don't know.
I would be listening to this show if I wasn't hosting
you
it.
You weren't hosting
it. I'd be listening because I like classic radio.
You do?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I like it a lot. And you know what? We have an Ellery Queen radio broadcast for you now. This was a detective series, came to radio in 1939, ran all the way to 1948. And it was very unique, Lisa, because this series invited a panel of armchair detectives, usually they were celebrities, to try to solve the case during the broadcast. They would go, to, you know, before Ellery Queen solved the case, they'd go to the armchair detectives and say, all right, who's the murderer? And, you know, whoever the celebrities were, they'd be like, well, I think it's this guy, and I think it's this guy. And here we were, the listeners, you know, trying to be armchair detectives, too. And Queen would often solve the cases that his father, Police Inspector Richard Queen, would call him in to help, you know, because they were tough cases. And Ellery's assistant and his love interest in the show was Nikki Porter. She was, you know, she was a cutie. And then Hugh Marlowe, Carlton Young, Sidney Smith, Lawrence Dobkin, and Howard Culver all played Queen. Quite a turnover on the character of Queen. A lot of actors played that part. Hope you enjoy this. What do you say? You want to listen to an episode from 1943 called The World Series Crime? Here's part one of The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Bottle Seltzer presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective in person. Ellery Queen again gives you a chance to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Then, at the point where he was able to solve the mystery, he stops the play, gives you a chance to guess the criminal's name. In the studio tonight, we have as our guests Ken Sears, New York Yankee catcher, and Art Flynn, business editor of the weekly newspaper Sporting News. We'd hope to have with us, too, the star second baseman of the Yankees, Joe Gordon, but he was unable to join us. However, Messrs. Sears and Flynn have accepted Ellery Queen's challenge to solve the mystery before the solution is revealed. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective, and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In tonight's story, Nicky and I quite unexpectedly become involved in the crucial game of the World Series. I call it The Adventure of the World Series Crime. Series. You all know what's happened. The Eagles won the first three games. Then the Larks came back to take the fourth and fifth games. And now the Larks are leading in the sixth game, 3-2. Here's the pitch. Ball four. That's a walk for Henderson. Fills the bases for the Eagles. Two out. We'll see now. Oh, here's the great Sparks himself coming to bat. Now let's see. A hit will score two runs. The Eagles will win 4-3, and the World Series will be over. But if the Larks can stop Sparky again, the series will be all tied at three games apiece, and the payoff game tomorrow, there it is, strike one, Sparks. You know, everybody's asking what's happened to Sparky. Champion batter of the major leagues, he was an Arkansas tornado in the first three series games, hit over 500, won the first three games for the Eagles almost single-handed, and then he folded. Here's the pitch, strike two. Sparky didn't get a hit in the fourth game or the fifth. And today, in three official tries, the great Sparks has popped up once and struck out twice with men in scoring positions. There it is. Ball one. That's 1-2 on Sparky. You know, there's some ugly rumors around, but take it from your Uncle Ted, they're just malarkey. You know, you've heard them, that Sparky's been drugged, Sparks has sold out to the gamblers. It's all... Here it is. Strike three. Sparky didn't even lift his bat off his shoulder. He's out. That's the game, folks. Ties it up at three games apiece. But what's happened to Sparks? Mr. Dayton, owner of the Eagles, wants to know. Mack McClune, fighting manager of the Eagles, wants to know. What's happened to Sparky?
No. Just a minute. Mr. Dayton's private office. What? No. Say, listen, Weisenheimer, I'll give it to you in plain English. There ain't no more tickets. Oh, hello, Mr. McClune.
The boss in, Susie?
Yeah, he's waiting for you. Say, Mr. McClune, I want to tip you off. The boss said me and the boyfriend could see today's game from his box, and, well, you know what that means.
Yeah. As usual, Dayton's ducking out in a pinch.
Yeah, well, the rest of us still think you can lick them bums, Mr. McClune.
Thanks, Susie. You want to see me, Mr. Dayton?
Oh, come in, Mac.
Yeah.
Mac, I am leaving you in complete charge.
Going away today, Mr. Dayton? I notice you have your golf clubs already.
Yes, I'm running up to the country club. I couldn't stand the strain of the final game, Mac. My heart, you know.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll phone you the result.
Well, it's not as if I were running out on you or the team, Mac.
Oh, it's not, Mr. Dayton.
You'll bench Sparks, of course.
Thought you were leaving me in charge.
But, my dear McClune, he's had half a dozen chances to win the series in the last three games. And what's he done?
If Sparky goes, I go.
Oh, he couldn't bat a ball with a coal shovel.
Bat a ball. Bat. Bat. Oh, what a fool I've been. Of course, the bat.
What are you raving about, Mac?
Look, Mr. Dayton, if your heart can stand the strain of making one phone call before you go out to play golf, just one, mind you, we can still win this series.
phone call.
I want a detective. Pay any fee he asks, but have him here in 15 minutes.
A detective? What detective, Mac?
The best in the world, Mr. Dayton. If there's one man can save this World Series for us, it's Ellery Queen.
In answer to Mac McClune's phone call, Ellery, Nicky, the inspector, and Sergeant Veely have just arrived.
Hello, Mac.
Hello, Ellery.
You know my father, Inspector Queen?
The inspector.
Hiya, Mac.
Sergeant Veely?
Hiya.
And this is my secretary, Nicky Porter.
Hello.
Miss Porter. When they heard you wanted me on a case, Mac, I couldn't shake them off.
Is there anything we can do to help the Eagles win, Mac?
Thanks, Inspector Queen.
We're Eagle fans, all of us.
We need them all, Miss Porter.
I got a week's salary on the Eagles, Mac.
You and a flock of others, Sergeant.
Where's Mr. Dayton?
In a place where he won't bother us. Ellery, if you can solve a mystery in 3 hours, we've still got a chance to win. If you can't...
Doesn't sound like Mac McClune talking.
3 hours. Give me the facts.
Well, Ellery, you know ball players. They're all kind of superstitious.
Yeah, remember how Babe Ruth always touched second base on his way in from right field at the end of every inning?
Sparky's worse, Sergeant. He's got a pet bat.
You mean Ellery's got to find one of those nasty things that fly around at night?
Mac's a baseball manager, Nicky, not a zookeeper. He means a baseball bat.
Go on, Mac.
Well, Ellery, with that pet bat of his, Sparky's the greatest hitter in the game today.
Without it, he's just a bummer.
Hold it, Sergeant. Mac, what happened to Spark's bat and when?
Well, the morning after the third game, Sparky told me about it, but it went clean out of my head. Somebody stole his bat.
Aha. If Sparky gets back his bat, you think he'll snap out of his slump, Mac?
Inspector, I'll eat your badge in the Lark's dugout if he don't.
Ellery's been asked to find stolen jewels, stolen documents, but a stolen baseball bat.
Quiet, Nicky. Mac, was the bat stolen from the clubhouse?
No, Ellery. Sparky was so nervous about it, he wouldn't leave it in the regular bat rack. He took it home with him.
Where does he live?
Well, Sparky got married just before the series.
You mean the World Series is Sparky's honeymoon?
Sort of, Miss Porter. So, Mr. Dayton gives Sparky and Lily, that's Sparky's wife, the use of his apartment during the series. They've been living there.
What are we waiting for? Let's go.
Here's Dayton's apartment, Inspector.
Okay, Mac. Billy, you park out here in the hall and watch this front door.
Huh?
We don't want to be disturbed. Go ahead, Ellery. Knock.
Fancy layout.
Oh, Inspector, you ain't leaving me out in the cold in a case like this.
Billy!
Yes, sir.
Mac, come on in.
Well, hello, Sparky. This is Inspector Queen, his son Ellery, and Miss Porter.
Howdy.
Oh, my meet the missus. Lily, meet Inspector Queen.
Gee, it's awful good of you folks to help Sparky.
I reckon I'm past being helped, Lily.
Maybe not, Mr. Sparks. When did you first discover your bat was stolen?
Well, Mr. Queen, I always put the bat in the hall closet there. The first thing I woke up the morning of the fourth game, I look in the closet, and Uncle Sam, that's my pet name for the bat, you see.
Sparky calls everything we own by a pet name, Mr. Queen. There's a skunk back home that bothered the chickens. Sparky calls him Hitler. I'm beginning to like you, Sparky.
The bat was missing, Sparky, when you first looked in the closet that morning?
No, Inspector. That time Uncle Sam's standing there all right. But then all that morning we have visitors, and when they go away and Lily and me get ready to mosey over to ballpark, why, I open the closet door and Uncle Sam's gone.
How many visitors did you have?
Wasn't it three, Lily?
Oh, four, Sparky.
Four visitors. Well, that means one of them must be the thief.
I reckon so, Miss Porter. I wasn't counting Mr. Dayton, Lily. He's not exactly a visitor, this apartment being his'n.
Mr. Dayton come first. He forgot to take his golf bag with him when he gave up this apartment.
So he comes to pick it up.
Tell Mr. Queen who the other three were, Sparky.
Okay, Mac. First there was Pegoli.
Pegoli? The big-time gambler?
I smell a rat.
And what did Mr. Pegoli want?
Well, it's sort of personal.
Oh, now, Sparky, you mustn't hold anything back if when you want Mr. Queen to help.
Lily's right, Sparky.
Well, Mac,
now, look here, Ellery. Sparky's the idol of sports fans all over the country, and he deserves to be. He sets a good example for the kids. Don't drink, don't smoke, a square shooter. But he's got one weakness that's going to get him in a heap of trouble. It already has.
I know. I read about it in the papers.
That's where Pegoli fits. Gambling.
Looks that way, Dad.
Commissioner had you on the carpet about it, didn't he, Sparky?
Yeah, Inspector.
But Sparky won't listen. He wastes most of his dough paying off.
Gee, I've tried so hard to make him stop. I even refused to marry him until he promised to quit. Only he didn't quit. I reckon you'll have to excuse me.
Oh, Lily. Be a good girl, Nikki, and keep Mrs. Sparks company in the next room.
All right, Ellery.
So you owe Pagoli money, Sparky, and he came here yesterday morning to collect, hmm?
When you start talking about gambling, Sparky shuts up like a clam.
Guess who's outside asking to see Sparky, Ellery?
Speak of the devil, Sergeant.
Huh? And big shot Pagoli.
Bring him in, Veely.
All right, Inspector. Step into the parlor, Mr. Fly.
Be careful with your hands, you. Oh, I beg your pardon, Mr. Sparks. I come back tomorrow, eh?
Well, now, I don't know.
Tomorrow'll be too late, Pagoli.
Inspector Quinn, I not see you at first.
In an umpire's eye, you not see him.
Be careful how you talk, Mr. Veely.
Sergeant Veely to you, pig.
My business with Mr. Sparks, it can wait. I go now.
Oh, wait, Mr. Pagoli.
What do you want?
Seeing how things are, maybe I better tell the truth.
The truth? You told me Pagoli came to see you the other day about the money you owe him, Sparks.
I didn't want to worry you, Mac. Mr. Pagoli here,
take care of what you spill, Hick.
He was willing to forget my IOUs if...
Mr. Sparks, I warn you.
If what?
If I threw the series, Mr. Queen.
So that's it, Pagoli, you dirty backstabber.
Oh, you from me. It's dropped. Now I'll give you a demonstration of the famous Veely. Say, Uncle. That's better.
Fireworks over? Now, Mr. Pagoli, did you have any bundles or packages with you when you visited this apartment the other day?
All of a sudden, no talk English, huh?
No, he didn't have, Mr. Queen.
You're sure, Sparky? Did he wear a top coat?
No, sir.
Okay. Let him out, Veely. Put a tail on him, though. I think we'll be seeing more of Mr. Pig.
Come on, Pig. Back to your stall.
Sparky, who were the other two visitors you had? Who came after Pagoli?
After Mr. Pagoli comes Collins.
Collins? Manager of the Larks?
Yep, and after Collins comes Buck Fisher.
Fisher's the first baseman on your own team, Mac, isn't he?
Yeah. Sparky beat Buck out of the batting championship by 3 points.
Less than 2 hours left. Time's running out. Dad, you and Mac tackle manager Collins of the Larks. Nicky and I will call on the vanquished Eagle batsman, Buck Fisher.
You'll find both of them at the stadium now, Ellery.
Good. That saves us time. Dad, we check with each other at the stadium. Sparks can give us the other details on the way over. Hurry.
All right, that's the first portion of The Adventures of Ellery Queen with the World Series crime, and we'll get back to it in a few minutes. First, these words. We have a Facebook page for this radio show. Just hop on Facebook and search for WGN Radio Theater. When you do that, please like us. I want to build those likes. You know, Nick DiGilio, he's got a lot of likes.
Yeah, he's been on this station for, what, like, how many years? 30 years or something.
A lot longer than us.
Yeah, a little bit longer than we have.
Nick
we're
great.
Coming up
I
on 2 years.
I love listening to Nick's show.
He's got a great
he's
show.
He's got a great. He's just, he's awesome on the air. And he's got a lot of likes.
Yeah.
I want to give
well,
him
we're
a,
coming up on 2 years here.
I would like to get to a fraction of Nick's likes.
Oh, you're
likes.
At a fraction.
I want to get more likes.
You're at a fraction already.
We're
right.
at a fraction. A very minute fraction.
Yes, indeed.
And then we have a website, too, WGNRadioTheater.com, and we have our schedule there of all the radio shows that we play here on Saturday and Sunday nights. Lisa and I are the WGN Radio Theater team.
We have a text in line, too. I'm staring
we
at
do,
it.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, 312-981.
I'm soaking in it.
7200.
Remember Palmolive?
Madge. Is soaking in it.
What is the text number?
312-981-7200, same as the call-in line.
It's very,
thank
it's
you.
Very accurate.
Thank you.
All right, so we're listening to The Adventures of Ellery Queen. This is from September 30th, 1943, called The World Series Crime, and it stars Sidney Smith. There's a picture of Sidney Smith up on our Facebook page. There's a picture of him, I believe. Yeah, there is. Should be. Right, Elif?
I'll let you know.
Elif says yes. All right, let's tune in to the conclusion of The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Collins, we've known each other since the old Sandlot days. We don't have to spar around.
Well, what's on your mind, Inspector?
Collins, why did you, the manager of the opposition team, drop in to see Sparks, the star batter of Mac's team, during the World Series?
It's your little idea, Mac? Trying to frame me just before the start of the last game?
You know me better than that, Collins.
Okay. Inspector, I ran up to see Sparky about our bet.
What bet?
$2,000, even money on a World Series winner.
Sparky bet his team to win, Collins?
That's a hot one. Did you ever hear of Sparky betting against himself? Sure, he bet on his team. With his team taking the first three games, I thought Sparky might be willing to raise the ante. At big odds, of course. But no soap.
Sparky said no?
He was willing, Mac. But his wife said nix.
Collins, were you wearing a top coat that morning?
Who, me? A top coat in this weather?
Did you have any bundles with you?
Criminy, no. Say, what's this all about anyway?
Forget it. Come on, let's go, Mac.
Just a minute, Inspector. Collins.
Yeah, Mac?
Who you pitching today?
See tonight's paper.
There's the door to the Eagles' locker room, Nicky.
Yes, and there come some Eagles.
Excuse me, are you Buck Fisher?
Yeah. See you out in the field, fellas.
Okay, see you later.
Who are you?
But don't you know Ellery Queen?
Never heard of him, lady. Hey, you're not the new sports writer for the Herald, are you?
Strike. No, Fisher, I'm a detective.
Detective? What goes?
A few simple questions, Mr. Fisher. Why did you pay a visit to Sparks the morning of the fourth game?
Well, Sparky and I had a bet all season on who'd wind up with the best batting average. Sparky won by 3 points. 10 is Hyde.
And I saw him do it. Made 5 hits in the last game of the season.
So what?
So why'd you drop in to see Sparky that morning, Fisher?
Oh, we had another bet. Who'd get the most hits in the series? Sparky hit like a house of fire the first 3 games, but I figured he'd fold. So that morning I comes up and I says, Sparky, how about doubling the bet?
Did he, Fisher?
He says yes, but his wife says no. So what's the matter, Sparky, cold feet? Well, Sparky says, okay. Then his wife starts the waterworks, so I beat it. But the double bet's on. Oh, there's a signal for batting practice. I gotta go out and cloud a couple.
Oh, Mr. Fisher.
Yeah?
Did you wear a top coat that morning or carry any packages?
What? No.
Miss Porter, why did you ask Fisher those last 2 questions?
If you can ask him of Pagoli, Mr. Queen, I can ask him of Fisher.
That's what I thought. Come on, Miss Copycat. Let's find Dad.
Inspector, you learned exactly as much from Collins as Ellery and I did from Buck Fisher.
Yeah, Nicky, a great big goose egg.
Ellery, the game will be starting in a few minutes. Are we getting anywhere?
Well, Sergeant.
We haven't even got to first base. Ellery, we're no nearer finding that bat than when we start.
I wouldn't say that, Dad.
Ellery, don't tell me you know where...
Yes, I know where Sparky's bat is, Nicky. There's only a 50-50 chance it's still there. Dad, step aside with me. I'll tell you what to do. Now, you telephone...
Ellery and his pesky secrets.
Yeah. I wonder what's cooking.
Nearly 2 hours since Dad made that phone call, Nicky, and no sign of anybody.
You'll wear out the sidewalk, Ellery.
2 hours waiting at the ball player's entrance, and we could have been inside with Dad and Vili watching the game. Dad, what inning is it?
Last of the night, son.
What's the score now, Sergeant?
Still the same, Miss Porter. 1-0 in favor of the Larks.
Oh, give up, Ellery. It's too late now. You must have been wrong this time.
Nicky, I tell you, I wasn't wrong. I couldn't have been. How can I go in there and face Mac McClune without that pet bat of Sparky's?
Well, you can't do the impossible, Ellery. He gave you only a few hours. What's that?
Nicky, this is it.
What? A police car? But Ellery,
what? You, Ellery Queen?
Yes?
Here it is. The bat.
Hooray! In time, Mr. McClune?
By the snakes of St. Patrick, it is. It's Sparky's bat. Hey, Sparks! Floyd, call Sparky back. He's on his way to the plate.
Right. I'm from the police department.
Hank, how's it stand?
Oh, we're behind, Inspector. Same as yesterday. 1-0 last. The ninth base is full. 2 out and Sparky up.
Sparks get a hit. Any hit will drive in 2 runs.
And we win.
Sparky, take the lead out of your feet.
Hey, what is it, Mac?
You're not benching me.
Your bat, Sparky. Your own bat here. Now go on out there and use it.
Uncle Sam. Don't you worry, Mac. Good old Uncle Sam won't let you down. One side, fellas.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery and, I hope, a solution as well. Nikki, will you be good enough to introduce our guest armchair detectives for this evening?
Well, Ellery, our guests tonight are certainly the right men to try to solve this mystery, because both of them know just about all there is to know about baseball. And when I tell you who they are, you'll see what I mean. Our first guest is Ken Sears, catcher of the New York Yankees and son of Ziggy Sears, famous National League umpire. You can be sure that when the Yankees meet the St. Louis Cardinals for the first World Series game October 5th, more than a few eyes will be watching Ken Sears.
All right, Nikki, I'll agree the first guest knows baseball. But what about the second?
Well, our second guest isn't a ball player. But that doesn't mean he doesn't know about baseball. He's Art Flynn, business manager of the Sporting News, the Bible of the baseball world. Mr. Flynn has been with the Sporting News for 16 years and has covered every World Series in that time. Mr. Flynn says that the Sporting News has a tremendous international circulation, since so many of its old readers are now in the service, but still yelling for their copies. And, incidentally, they get them. And now, Ellery?
Mr. Sears, I have 2 questions for you this evening. Number 1, where did I find Sparky's bat? And 2, who stole it?
Well, Mr. Queen, I believe you found that bat in Mr. Dayton's golf bag.
Mr. Dayton's golf bag. And how did it get there?
Well, I believe Mr. Dayton visited Sparky's apartment that morning, and I believe he stole that bat and went out to the golf course to play golf and missed that last game of the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Sears. And now, Mr. Flynn, where did I find Sparky's bat and who stole it?
I think I've got to agree with Ken Sears, Ellery, that he found it in the golf bag because no one had a top coat. And secondly, I'd say that the person that put it there was Lily, the wife, because when they were talking about if he threw the series and she walked out and said no when they wanted to double his bet, it's a case of that famous French saying, cherchez la femme.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Flynn and Mr. Sears.
But Ellery, where did you find the bat?
That was simple, Nikki, once I knew the facts. Only 4 people, Dayton, Pagoli, Collins, and Fisher, visited Sparky between the last time he saw the bat in the closet and the time he saw it was gone. So obviously, 1 of those 4 stole the bat from the apartment.
Well, I said that long ago, Ellery, but which one?
The important question wasn't who took the bat, Nikki, but how. How was the bat taken out of the apartment under Sparks' nose without Sparks seeing it?
Strike one.
After all, a bat is a sizable object, 36 inches long and a solid hunk of hickory.
So that's why you asked about the packages and the topcoats, huh?
Right, Dad. But none of the 4 visitors carried a package or wore a topcoat. The topcoat idea was a shot in the dark. Actually, you can't conceal a 36-inch baseball bat under a coat, or inside a trouser leg for that matter, and still walk like a human being. Yet the bat was taken from the apartment. How?
Ball one.
There was 1 article taken out of that apartment that was big enough to conceal a 36-inch baseball bat.
But Spark said nothing went outside.
Wrong, Dad. Spark said 1 thing did go out. Remember? Dayton's golf bag.
Dayton? The owner of the Eagles, the one who lent the Sparks his apartment?
That's right. Dayton came back for his golf bag, Sparky said.
And with the top zippered over, it'd hold a baseball bat and not be seen.
No! Strike 2.
Now, either Dayton put the bat in his golf bag or someone else did. If Dayton were the thief, the first thing he'd do once he was out of the hotel was get rid of the bat. But if someone else put the bat into Dayton's bag and Dayton hadn't yet looked inside, the bat would still be there.
So, Nikki, Ellery told me to phone the chief of police nearest to Dayton's country club.
Chief rushed to the club, found Dayton's bag still unopened, and the bat inside.
So Mr. Dayton can't be the thief.
And there's ball two.
Then who stole the bat? Who did it? Well, who hid it in Dayton's golf bag?
Well, who was in the apartment when Dayton took away his bag? Not Pagoli, not Collins, nor Fisher. None of them had arrived yet. Only two people were there besides Dayton, Sparks and his wife. Did Sparky steal his own bat? Would he deliberately get rid of the one thing he needed most to win his bet?
No. Couldn't be Sparks.
Then it must be... You mean his own wife?
Mrs. Sparks stole that bat.
She's the only one left, so Sparky's wife must be the thief.
For Pete's sake, Ellery, what?
Mrs. Sparks.
Yes, Mr. Queen.
Will you come here, please?
You were wanting me, Mr. Queen.
You heard what I just said.
Mrs. Sparks, Lily, why did you do it?
Oh, gee, I thought if Sparky lost his pet bat, he'd lose his bets with Collins and Fisher and Pagoli and all the others. I thought that would cure him. But I didn't realize what it would mean to Mac and to Sparky's teammates and all the fans. I was scared to admit it.
Foul.
Ellery, do we have to tell Sparky?
If everything comes out all right, I don't see why, Nicky.
Oh, you're a darling.
Don't forget Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam came through in the clutch, and he always will. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Mr. Sears and Mr. Flynn for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. We want especially to compliment Mr. Flynn on his skill in solving the crime. We have for both Mr. Sears and Mr. Flynn a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, also an autographed copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Female of the Species, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Say, Ellery, Come on back here a minute. You got anything to say before we close up this shop?
Yes, I have, Chappie.
Huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, because you had asked for them, during the summer months, we brought you what we felt were the best of the Ellery Queen mysteries broadcast during the last 5 years. Tonight's story marks the end of these command performances. For with next Saturday's mystery, we will again bring you brand new Ellery Queen adventures.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop travels to Bowling Field in Washington. Parks Johnson and Warren Hull will interview men of our Army Air Force. Consult your local paper for the time and station. Music for The Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul.
That is The Adventures of Ellery Queen, September 30th, 1943, The Adventure of the World Series Crime, and that starred Sidney Smith as Ellery Queen, as heard on the National Broadcasting Company. I hope you enjoyed that. 7 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning, happy Monday, Lisa. Happy Monday to our listeners.
Happy Monday.
And thank you, all of our listeners, for tuning us in on Saturday and Sunday nights here on the greatest radio station on the planet, WGN. We're in the Allstate studio. It's all remodeled. There's all kinds of...
I don't know if it's remodeled, but...
Yeah, they painted all the walls.
Well, yeah, the walls are... We've got the Allstate paper on there, but it's treetime.com came and decorated.
Yeah.
It's beautiful in
here. All the decorations up. And we should pin some decorations on you, Lisa. We'll pin some...
That's fine.
Some...
Some what?
Pin some of these...
you can't think of anything to say.
A garland. We'll put some garland on you and some, these... bunch of Christmas
things.
Ornaments.
Okay.
Put some ornaments on you.
All right.
Make you a Christmas tree.
All right.
Treetime.com.
Right.
Right.
I might need the Lightkeeper Pro and the Setkeeper to smell like
a tree. I was watching TV and I saw a commercial for the Lightkeeper
Did
Pro.
Did you get all excited?
I was like, hey, we give those away to our listeners.
Yeah.
It's
a great gift.
Yeah, you can get it at their website or at stores. I think they have it at Home Depot and things like that.
Probably,
You can win one. In fact, you can win one right now.
Well, that's not exactly what we're giving away
Okay. All right. Well, we have a episode of The Whistler coming up in this hour. You're going to really like that. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Bobby Riggs in Battle of the Sexes, the true story of the 1973 tennis match between Billie Jean
really?
King and
he
Bobby
plays
Riggs.
Bobby Riggs?
Mm-hmm.
Who plays Billie Jean King, do you know?
I do. I can't think of it right now.
It's like a historic event, you know.
I think it was on Wide World of Sports. I remember watching it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So here's what do they win, first of all?
Oh, they are going to win a certificate for a desktop sports-themed artificial Christmas tree of your choice from Tree Time Christmas Creations.
All right. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This guy starred in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
You think I'm pretty?
Oh, yes. Go. Oh, God. Yes.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
Do you think I'm pretty? Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
You're pretty. God, I just want to live.
Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Well, the holidays are fast approaching, so order gifts for everyone with the simple click of a mouse. I received a package from Omaha Steaks, and it's quality at an incredibly reasonable price. And guess what? I'm now a friend for life. For only $49.99, you get our family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter promo code Bill in the search bar. That is 77% off their regular price. Omaha Steaks offers you great steak experiences at home. They also have seafood, poultry, pork, and much, much more. Now, this exclusive savings is just for our listeners. Listen to everything you're going to receive for under $50. Ready? 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha steak seasoning packet, plus 4 additional kielbasa sausages for free. So go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code Bill in the search bar, add the family gift pack, and you're going to receive 77% savings. Unbelievable. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit.
All right, Lisa, should we play that movie clip again?
Let's do it.
Nope. Oh, wait a minute. I think I have to read.
You got to do over there.
Yeah. Raised in Chicago, reporting on Chicago. That's Mark Sepulsa and Micah. Micah Mater. Okay. Micah Mater. Watch Chicago's very own Mark and Micah weeknights on WGN TV News.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Not good with names.
No, I noticed that.
I should let you read these from now on.
You had a little trouble when we first started here at this radio station with our with some names.
With
Steve Ruxton. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a really nice guy.
It's
just that you had trouble with the name Ruxton.
He probably hates me.
He does.
I know.
Okay, so we're back and we're playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play this movie clip one more time.
You think I'm pretty?
Oh, yes. Go. God, yes.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
You're not looking at me.
Yes, you're pretty.
Do you think I'm pretty? Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
You're pretty. You're pretty. God, I just want to live.
Oh, I so love that movie. We have Stephen on the line from Kenosha. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
So who is that actor from 40-Year-Old Virgin?
That's Steve Carell.
Steve Carell is right. You are a winner. We're so excited to give you a certificate. You get a desktop sports-themed artificial Christmas tree of your choice with white micro lights from Treetime Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. Check it out at treetime.com. Thank you so much, Stephen, for calling in and listening.
Well, thank you very much. You guys have a good day.
Oh, thank you, Stephen.
Appreciate it. We've got
one last radio show here tonight, so stay up for The Whistler.
The Whistler, great series. It premiered in 1942, was sponsored by Signal Oil. And Bill Forman played the role of The Whistler the longest. And there was always ironic twist of fate at the end. You know, that was the key to The Whistler. There was always a twist. At the end, you'd be following this thing, and then whoa, whammo, Zacko, pow.
Zacko.
Zacko, pow at the end. Yeah, they had great actors on this. Jack Webb, Gerald Moore, Elliot Lewis, William Conrad. Nearly 700 episodes of The Whistler aired from 1942 until 1955. And it made a brief transition to television. Wasn't as popular on TV. All right, we have an episode now of The Whistler called The Beloved Fraud. And this stars Bea Benaderet. So let's tune in to part one now of The Whistler.
Let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. The Signal Oil Program. The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, The Beloved Fraud. I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Presently, I'll tell you of nameless terrors they dare not speak. And now, The Whistler. Bitterness, like wine, matures with age. And high on a dismal and windswept hill, on the outskirts of a small New England factory town, sits a house in which bitterness is a living thing, a companionable presence. It's an old house, weather-beaten, run down, with perhaps a touch of its own bitterness, a silent lament for splendor long gone. There was a time back in 1905 when bitterness was young and splendor was still present, and the Woodford sisters sat in the comfortable parlor before the winter's fire and read poetry to each other. Emma, graying, commanding, the protector. Constance, the younger, timid, yielding.
All poets use the skies, the clouds, the fields. The happy violets hiding from the roads. The primroses run down to carrying gold. The tangled hedgerows where the cows push out impatient horns. Intolerant churning mouths twixt dripping ash boughs. Hedgerows all alive with birds and gnats and large white butterflies. Constance.
Oh, yes, Emma.
Constance, aren't you interested?
Yes, Emma.
You've always been very receptive to the works of Mrs. Elizabeth Barrett Browning. You seem on edge. What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing really, Emma.
Well, something's the matter. Don't lie to me, Constance. You've been fussing and fretting all day, peeking out the window.
Oh, Emma, for pity's sake.
Constance!
I'm sorry, but I was only looking out the window. I thought perhaps Mr. Willoughby might be coming by. He usually passes about this time.
And why should you be so interested in the mailman? Were you expecting a letter?
You know I'm not. You know how seldom anything comes for me. Only once in a while from Aunt Sarah or somebody like that.
Constance, I don't believe you're happy.
Happy? I hadn't thought about it, not that way. I don't know, Emma.
After all I've tried to do for you.
Yes, I know, Emma. Oh, please don't think me ungrateful. You've been wonderful.
I've been a mother to you, Constance, ever since dear Mama left us.
I know, I know.
And now you tell me you're not happy here. Act bored and fidgety, almost like I was keeping you prisoner. Always wanting to go out.
But if only we went out just once in a while. If only for a walk in the village.
It's not the fit place for ladies to walk unescorted.
But we never have anyone to escort us, ever. Unless... Emma, perhaps old Mr. Willoughby would escort us to the village sometime.
Constance, have you lost your mind? A postman.
But he's a very nice old gentleman. He's the only person I ever see, except Dorothy. And I like him.
The only people you ever see. The postman and our housekeeper. And what about me?
Oh, you. Of course you, Emma. I always see you.
But you'd rather be with the others. Oh, yes, don't think I don't know how Dorothy brings you tea in your room and sits and talks.
a common housekeeper.
But she's very nice, Emma. And genteel, too. You said so yourself when you hired her. A good family, you said, not like a servant at all.
But she is a servant now, Constance. Our servant. I've heard you laughing when you thought I wasn't around.
Well, why shouldn't we laugh a little? Why shouldn't people laugh and have fun? Be happy? Oh, Emma!
There. Now, don't cry, dear. Of course you should be happy. That's what I've tried to do for you.
I
love you, my dear, and because I promised Mama that I'd look after you. Make a home for you.
I know. I'm sorry to be so hateful, Emma. You know I appreciate what you've done.
Well, let's say no more about this now, dear. You run up to your room and dry your tears. I'll have Dorothy bring up a warm cup of tea. And then you and she can have your talk. You'd probably planned on that anyway.
Oh, Emma, don't be angry about Dorothy. It's not that I enjoy her more than you. Honestly, it's just that she tells me things. Things about the outside, the city, the world, people. I like that.
You're tired of your home here, aren't you, Constance?
No, Emma, I'm not. It's a very nice home, I know that. Only I had hoped that I might see the city, go on a holiday, a little trip or something. But you always say no.
Yes, dear, I always say no. And I know what's best for you.
Yes, Sister Emma knows best, Constance. She's always known best, and before her, it was dear Mama whom she adored. You should be grateful to have someone else looking out for you, taking care of you, running your life for you. But you're not, are you, Constance? You're unhappy, desperately unhappy.
Here you are, Miss Constance. Some nice hot tea.
Oh, thank you, Dorothy.
There, dear. Now you mustn't carry on so. Crying spoils your pretty eyes.
Oh, Dorothy, what am I to do?
Do? There's precious little you can do with her running you like you didn't have a mind of your own.
But I do have a mind of my own. I'm not a child.
Of course you're not. You're a grown woman, and you're not getting any younger. If ever you're going to get out of here and find happiness, you'll have to do it soon.
I know. Perhaps it's too late now. That's what I keep telling myself.
Too late, fiddlesticks. You're only 35, and there are plenty of gentlemen who'd find you very attractive.
Do you think so, Dorothy? Do you really think so?
Of course I do. If ever she'd let you go into town by yourself, you'd see. The men would stare.
Oh, Dorothy, we shouldn't talk like this. What would Emma say?
She'd say it was wicked, no doubt, because she hates men. Why, I don't know. But she's wrong. Why should it be wicked for a woman to want the men to notice her? It's natural. Every woman should have the attentions of a man. Fall in love. Get married.
Do you really think so, Dorothy?
Of course. And you'll find one yet. Don't you worry.
Oh, it's not that. I've never thought really and truly about getting married or anything like that. Never seemed that I was meant for anything like that. But just to meet people, other women and men, see something besides the insides of this house. Oh,
I know, and you shall. Why shouldn't you leave her and live your own life?
But she'd never let me do it. She's so strong, and she'd find a way to stop me, bring me back.
Perhaps I can help you.
You, Dorothy?
Yes, Miss Constance. What you need is a man. A man who will come and take you out of here. Then Emma would have nothing to say about it.
But where? Where would I meet a man? No one ever comes here.
Perhaps one will, if we work it right.
What do you mean, Dorothy?
I have a cousin. He's a fine man, a widower, and just the type for you. I'm sure you and he would find each other very interesting.
Does he live here, in the village?
No, he lives in New York.
In New York? The city?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but Dorothy, how will I ever meet him?
By letter. I'll write and tell him about you. Give him your permission to write. You will have many things to say to each other. And perhaps, who knows, what may come of it.
And that was the beginning, wasn't it, Constance? Remember how you waited for his first letter, half afraid that it would come, half fearful that it wouldn't? And then how you hid it until Emma had gone to bed, and then pored over every word again and again until after dawn. In a later one, he sent you his picture. Julian, handsome, a trifle slick-looking, not like the countrymen in the village. You sent him your picture and told Emma you'd misplaced it. And then after months came the letter asking you to marry him, telling you he was coming to the village to get you. And the last letter that day, You read it in the grape arbor and came running in to tell Dorothy.
Dorothy! Dorothy!
Constant, such noise.
Emma! Oh, I thought you'd gone down to the grocer's.
And this is the way you behave behind my back? What do you have there, Constance? A letter?
Why? Oh, yes.
Oh, well, I suppose it's from Aunt Sarah. Come in and read it to me.
I can't, Emma.
What do you mean you can't?
It's personal.
Personal? Do you know what you're saying? We have no secrets from one another. We never have. I always read you my letters.
But this is personal. I can't read it to you.
Constance, you're acting very strangely. Let me see that letter.
No, no!
You're hiding something from me. Let me see it.
No! You're hurting my arm!
Constance, baby. What have I done that you should treat me this way? Haven't I always thought of you? Always before myself? And now you tell me you have something private and personal between us.
Oh, I'm sorry, Emma. I didn't mean to hurt you, really. But, well, I suppose I might as well tell you now. You'll know soon enough. He's coming here tonight.
He? What are you talking about, Constance?
Julian, my friend. This is his letter telling me he will be here tonight.
You've written to a strange man behind my back.
There's nothing wrong with it. We've just exchanged letters, such nice letters. He's told me such wonderful, interesting things about life in the city.
Constance, how could you do anything so sinful?
Please try to understand, Emma. Perhaps you're satisfied to stay here in this old house all your life, but I'm young and I have a right to some happiness. I want to get out, to live.
So, this creature wants to take you away. After all I've done for you. Grown old, caring for you, giving up everything for you.
No, Emma, you've given up nothing. Everything is just the way you want it. You keep saying that you're taking care of me for Mama, but you're not. You're keeping me tied here, trying to make me give up everything for you. And I can't do it, not any longer, Emma. If Julian will take me, I will go away with him. I will marry him.
Who is this man? How did you meet him?
He's Dorothy's cousin. She told him to write.
The relative of our servant.
You said yourself she came from a good family. He's just as good as anybody. He's wonderful.
What do you know about him?
Everything. He's been writing regularly for 6 months. He's told me everything.
You fool. You fool. Why do you suppose a man like that would want to marry a country girl, 35, like you? Don't you see he's after your money? Dorothy's told him that you have money Mama left you. That's all he's after.
That's not true.
Oh, isn't it? Well, you'll never get the chance to find out because you'll not go off with him.
I'm through obeying you, Emma. I shall go with Julian. Tonight.
We'll see about that, Constance. We'll see.
We'll see, Lisa.
We will see.
All right, that's the first portion of The Whistler. We'll get back to that in a few moments. All right. Thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. It is 1:35 in the morning here on Monday morning, and we are in the home stretch. We have the last portion of The Whistler coming your way in just one moment, but I do want to remind all of our listeners, if you have not signed up for freeradioclassics.com, you should do it right now, because we will be sending out an email around 3 o'clock today in the afternoon. So if you haven't signed up, you're going to miss out on the email I send. So every single Monday, I will send you an email that has a classic radio show uninterrupted. It's a full 30-minute show with the original commercials in there, digitally remastered. And you'll get a different show every single Monday. Along with the email, there'll be pictures of the stars, the cast list, the synopsis, the sponsor, the network. And there's other things in the email, too, like a link to the blog that I write and other fun stuff. So do sign up to freeradioclassics.com. It is just that, absolutely free. You get 52 classic radio shows from me every single year. And just go to that website, put your name and your email address, and you'll get your first email tomorrow. Well, actually, today, Monday, during the end of the afternoon sometime. FreeRadioClassics.com. Okay, it's time for the conclusion to The Beloved Fraud, starring Bea Benaderet on The Whistler.
You're listening to The Whistler, brought to you by your friend, the Signal Oil Company. Marketers of famous Signal gasoline, your best buy today. Remember to let every go signal remind you, you do go farther with Signal gasoline.
Well, Constance, the time has come at last. Julian will be here soon, and you've told Emma that you're leaving. Can she stop you? Can she carry out her threat to keep you here? Perhaps the only answer to that is Julian. And at last, after dinner, he's here.
Here is Julian, Miss Constance.
Constance?
Oh, Julian. Come in. Do come in.
Constance, so at last we meet, face to face.
Yes. I hope it's not a disappointment.
Disappointment? Anything but that. You're just as I expected you to be. And what about me?
Oh, yes. You're just as I expected you'd be.
But I interrupted something. You were tending the fire?
No, I was burning your letters.
Then you've regretted your decision, Constance.
No, Julian.
Then why?
I warned you. It's Emma. She wants to stop us. She's upstairs hunting for these letters now.
We shall leave anyway. She can't stop us.
But she'll do everything she can. She'll stop at nothing. Some fiendish power I don't understand impels her.
Yes, Constance. Go on.
Julian.
You are Emma?
I am Constance's sister.
Constance, if you haven't already done so, go pack your bags.
I haven't packed. You would have seen and asked questions. I'll hurry.
Come back here, Constance.
What do you want? What?
You must listen to me. This man does not love you, I know. Don't be a fool. Don't risk everything on this sudden wild impulse. Think of me. How lonely I'll be. This man wants your money. And what do you think he'll do with you when he finds you have none?
But I do, Emma. Half of what Mama and Papa left is mine.
Yes, but I have control of it. You don't even know where it's kept. Did you think I would just give it to you?
I don't care about the money, and neither does Julian. I'm going to pack. I won't be long.
You'll only have to unpack, Constance.
Constance and I are to be married, Miss Emma, with or without sisterly approval.
I understand that to be your intention.
Surely you can have no objection. She's not a child. She's 30.
35.
35.
Yes. Constance has never been very practical or serious-minded. When Mama and Papa were killed in a train wreck many years ago, I realized Constance was in my charge, that it was my duty to shield her from the ills of the world.
I believe I understood you to say Miss Constance has no control over her money.
You understood correctly.
Well, I'm not poor, though far from it. But of late I've suffered some reverses and...
Constance will have no money unless I give it to her.
You know, I admire a woman like you. I admire your strength, your practicality.
Really?
And now, Miss Emma, that I've come face to face with you and your sister, it seems to me that you're strikingly the more admirable of the two.
Just what are you implying?
That perhaps I was being too hasty. Perhaps if I were to think this over... You know, Miss Emma, you too have a right to a man's protection and a man's love.
You filthy beast. I've never asked for a man's love or a man's protection, and I never shall. I shall have to advise Constance of this interesting deviation in character and this sudden change of affection. And as for you, leave this house.
I shall leave. But Constance comes with me. Now, understand, I have not the slightest interest in your sister. Especially now. But just because you're so dead set on keeping her here with you, I'm going to take her with me. Of course, I may drop her like a hot penny in a few weeks, but... Why, Constance, pigeon... Whatever you heard, don't you believe a word of it. I was just teasing your sister here, the old pill. I'm crazy about you, girl. You know that.
Don't you come near me. Don't you dare.
Why, Constance. After all the sweet, endearing things you said in your letter...
Get out of this house!
Say, who do you think you're talking to in that tone of voice?
You'd better leave.
No, I think I'll stay and sit a spell. Who's to know there's a gentleman paying a call way out here in the edge of town? Who's to know what's going on out here?
Julian, I packed more than clothes in these grips. As you can see, you are not staying in this house.
Hey, lady, put down that revolver. Firearms are dangerous things to be handling, especially for a woman. It might go off.
You're right.
Constance, be careful.
Well, turn it in some other direction.
I like the way it's facing.
Look, ladies, I was only fooling. Just trying to give you a bit of sport, that's all. To liven up a dull winter evening, that's all.
Good night.
I never saw such people. Talk about your New England hospitality. Must have been invented by somebody who was never in New England. Well, good night, ladies. It's been downright charming.
Constance. Constance, you were wonderful. I never thought you could be so brave, standing right up to that big bully. Oh, that was so clever of you, bringing down Papa's old revolver. And so brave. How could you do it? Oh, my heart. Constance, sit down, dear. Please do. There. Oh, if anything should happen to you, I don't know what I'd do.
I'm all right. Emma.
Yes, dear.
Why won't you allow me to have my own banking account? I promise you I won't be extravagant. It's just that I would feel more of an adult. A person of my own right if I knew I could have access to my money.
Constance, you are so brave and so forceful. Of course I shall see that you have access to your money. You saved my life.
And you will let me have my own account?
The money isn't in the bank, Constance.
It's not?
No. It's right here. Right in the house. I wouldn't trust the bank. There might be a run on it someday.
But Julian might have searched the house. Taken it all.
I know. I was frightened to death. Your facing him with the revolver was the only thing that saved us. But I have the money well hidden. In a safe behind this picture of dear Mama. And only I know the combination.
I never knew there was a safe there.
Come, I'll show you.
Emma, relieved of her fright, is more human than you've ever seen her, isn't she, Constance? She seems really happy as she goes to the safe and opens it.
There it is. All there. You didn't know we were so wealthy, did you, little sister?
How much is it, Emma?
At my last count, it was a little over $250,000, including the bonds. Mama was so wise. She made Papa invest in only the safest things. So you see,
dear... All right, ladies, if you'll just hand over the contents of that safe.
You, Julian.
I availed myself of your servant's entrance, Miss Emma. Informal, but practical.
Constance, the revolver there on the floor. Get the revolver.
I have the revolver now. Now it is my turn to give directions. Back against the wall and let's not have a sound from you. Don't know who'd hear you way out here if you did yell.
Constance, do something. Don't let him take our money. What'll happen to us? That's our security. Our future, our happiness.
My security, my future and happiness, Emma. Don't worry, he's only taking my half.
What do you mean?
Julian and I planned the whole thing. Only we didn't know it was going to be this easy. I thought I'd have to draw the money out of the bank. It's much simpler this way.
What are you saying, Constance? You can't know what you're saying.
Oh, yes, I do know. I thought it would take a fright to make you part with my money. Well, I wrote Julian it would be a battle, and he suggested this little plot. You were happy, weren't you, Emma, when you thought Julian a thief and a rotter? You were gloating inside because you thought everything you had said was true.
Constance, you must be out of your mind.
Julian and I are going to travel all over the world. I'm going to live at last. I'm going to see things.
The Lord will punish you, Constance.
Oh, I've had my share of punishment, Emma. All the long, rotten years I've had to spend with you.
I have your grips in the money, Constance. Shall we leave?
Yes. Yes, Julian.
Goodbye again, Miss Emma.
Vile, unspeakable man.
You vile, unspeakable woman.
No. You'll be sorry, Constance. You'll regret this to the end of your days. I shall hate you. Hate you forever and ever. My hate will reach out for you wherever you are. You'll never be happy.
Goodbye, Emma.
Constance! Constance, how could you?
Miss Emma, have they gone?
You. You're the cause of this. After I gave you a home, a job, companionship, you did this to me. I could kill you.
No, Miss Emma, calm yourself.
You took her away from me. You're responsible for me being left alone to live out a miserable, lonely old age.
No, stop looking at me like that. She'll be back.
Back? She'll never... What did you say?
I...
Why are you so sure she'll be back? You know something more about this, don't you? What do you know, Dorothy? Why should Constance come back if she's got the money?
I don't know, only you said yourself that... He might take the money from her.
But he's your cousin, Dorothy. You must know him well. Therefore, you must know he is going to take the money and leave her penniless to come shrinking back to me. Don't you, Dorothy? Don't you?
All right. Yes, I do. He planned it that way. And I'm not sorry. It's what the two of you deserve. What good was it doing you, either of you? It'll help Julian and me to really live again.
So you're going to get part of it, too?
Yes. Yes. And it's only what I deserve after what I put up with from you. And there's nothing you can do about it now. They're already on their way to the city to be married.
What are you laughing at?
You think I want to stop you? No, take the money. I'm glad you're here. Take it. You're welcome to it. Because now Constance will be back. She'll be penniless. Take the money. I'll have Constance back. I'll have Constance back.
Yes, Emma sat in the lonely old house and waited, nursing her bitterness. And down in the city at a small hotel, Julian stood at the desk, waiting for his bride and her money. Constance was upstairs, dressing for the wedding. It was scheduled to take place at the little church just around the corner within the hour. As the minutes went by and the time grew short, Julian became impatient. He went upstairs to the room looking for Constance. She wasn't there. On the table, he found a note.
Dear Julian, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you see, I knew all along what you really wanted from me. I suppose it was deceitful to let you believe you were succeeding, but I needed your help to gain my freedom. Now that I have it, and the money, I thank you and wish you good luck. Goodbye, Constance.
Julian knew what that meant. And after a time, so did Emma, sitting alone in the old house on the hill.
At 9 o'clock, the Signal Oil Company will bring you another strange tale by the Whistler, the curious tale of the twins. The Signal Oil program is broadcast for your entertainment by the Signal Oil Company, makers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil, and by your neighborhood Signal Oil dealer, who is at your service daily to keep your car running for the duration. The Signal Oil program, produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Victor Kushner and music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Bob Anderson speaking for your friend, the Signal Oil Company, and suggesting once again that you let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You know, that reminds me, I have to fill up my tank. Should I stop at a Signal gasoline station to do that?
If you can find one, I think you should.
I'm not, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just wander around the streets from here all the way to Barrington.
And look around.
And I'm not going to stop at any gas station unless it's a Signal oil station.
Good. Well,
As sort of a thank you to this series. The Whistler. That's how much I like it.
Remember I told you what happened when
I
stopped at the gas station on Ontario on my way home?
Oh, yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
No, don't be doing at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock.
Not
you don't
good.
Want to be. Nah.
No.
Try to get your gasoline during the day. It's
Got
probably
it.
A little
I'll
safer,
look for my Signal
Lisa.
Oil during the daylight hours.
Right. That's The Whistler, October 30th, 1944, The Beloved Fraud. Sponsored by Signal Oil. Bea Benaderet in that cast, along with Jane Morgan. I don't know who the younger woman was, but there was Jane Morgan and Bea Benaderet as the two older ladies in that show. Hope you enjoy that. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Nick DiGilio is in the house. What's up, Nick?
Hey.
What's going on, my friend?
Not much. I'm back. Had a week off.
Nice. You look rested. You look tan.
It's good. I guess the lighting in my apartment
it's
did that.
It's the moonlight.
So, first of all, I got to ask you, what show should I go see? What am I missing? What should I go
what
see?
What movie?
Yeah.
Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Casey Affleck.
It's supposed to be great, right?
It's amazing.
How is that movie?
Allied is very good, too.
Allied's good?
Yeah. We're going to review those later.
How is the movie that with Warren Beatty? Where he
oh,
plays.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
No. Because that looks good, too.
No, I can't wait. I love Warren Beatty.
Yeah,
and
I really want to see that.
Rules Don't Apply, and he plays Howard Hughes in it. And,
but Casey Affleck, that's the movie to see, right?
Yeah.
Manchester by the Sea.
Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to review. Actor. We've got to catch up, because since I was off last week, we have to review last week's movies first and this week's movies after that. So we're going to do that coming up after 2.
All right, that's coming up. Don't miss Nick DiGilio. And then is your dad calling in with a joke?
Monday morning. It wouldn't be Monday morning.
That's true. What else do you have on the show
there's this unusual story out of Australia where there's a lot of crows that are now, for some reason, attacking people. So we're going to ask people to call in with their crazy animal encounters, if they've ever had any, like, weird animal encounters. Like, I will tease one of the stories that I'm going to tell. When I was living with my folks, I went out on the back porch, and there was the biggest, ugliest possum that was sitting right in front of the back door. And we couldn't get it to leave. It just wouldn't leave.
It's hanging out.
Yeah. It was. Have you seen a possum up close?
It took your name.
Have you ever seen a possum up close?
It was Possum DiGilio.
Yeah.
No, I've never seen one up close.
They are ugly as hell.
Right, they're ugly animals.
They look like really big, mean rats.
Ew, gosh.
But they're not. I understand that they're not. They're not. They're going to attack you.
Yeah.
In fact, when you approach them, they play dead. They play possum.
Oh,
that's why they're called. That's why they call it playing possum, because it's a defense mechanism.
Right.
That if you try to attack a possum, it plays dead. Like, I'm dead already. You can't attack
me.
Don't
even bother me.
So, but it looked like a damn monster. And so we threw water on it. We tried to get it off. It stayed on the porch for like 3 hours. Wouldn't leave. Wouldn't leave. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff we want to talk about, like weird animal encounters. But the crows are attacking people in Australia. So if you go to Australia, wear a hat.
You know what, Nick? Recently, I had a big bird that came. I think it was a hawk that came down and tried to pick up my dog and take him away.
Are you kidding me?
No,
that really happened?
Yeah, it really happened. And he bumped into him with his beak, and then he went back up.
A hawk?
I don't know what kind of bird. Big bird with very wide wings.
In Chicago?
Yeah. I can't attest to the
type of bird it was.
No, it was a very large bird. And
okay.
He tried it again. Boom.
To take your dog?
Yeah. He swooped down and tried to grab him. No, it really happened.
I know that's why we're going to talk about this, because I know that people have crazy stories.